Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
My buddy Natalie Marks, Dr. Natalie Marks, is in the studio with us. Our phone number, 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call at that number. We have a lot to talk about, and to an extent, whatever you want to talk about. Good morning to all of you, and good morning, Dr. Marks. How are you?
I'm great.
Well, hold it. I didn't push the right button. There we go. Try it again.
I'm great.
Oh, try it again. Let me try that again.
I don't know. This is not the welcome I normally get, Steve.
I know.
How are you this morning?
If I don't turn on your microphone, it's really hard for people to hear you. So that's my fault. I apologize. Although if you talk really loud, maybe. 312-981-7200. First of all, lots to talk about.
Yes.
That bill that I've been talking about, the House bill that has been kind of hanging on in committee and passed by committee, actually. To make that clear, it has, but they wanted to tweak the bill in just some of the wording, some of the technical wording and about enforcement of it. But the idea still stands, and it's still moving ahead and moving ahead as quickly as these things in Springfield sometimes can move, which isn't so quickly. But the bill, because of kennel fires and what happened is one fire in January in West Chicago that prompted me to say, but it wasn't only West Chicago. There was a similar fire that killed almost as many dogs outside Baltimore. There was one just a couple of weeks ago in Minnesota where all these dogs are being killed in kennel fires. So according to the law in Illinois, there would have to be working smoke alarms that go directly to first responders, and thank you, Representative Diane Pappas, for supporting this, or sprinkler system, or a human being there, which just kind of makes sense to me. I mean, I was surprised we already didn't have that as law, but we didn't, and because we don't, and most states don't, then there's a problem, and that problem we've seen the results of, all these dogs dying in fires, and the deaths are preventable. So the good news is it's kind of sailing along. I have some interesting news, one tale at a time. I was there. That's a rescue animal shelter. I'm sure you've treated dogs that had been rescued from one tale at a time. And they often take dogs that no one else will take from Chicago Animal Care and Control. And to be clear, friends, they only take dogs from Chicago and from Chicago Animal Care and Control. And they want another building. That other building is now a liquor store that has, it's been vacant for, I don't know how long, a very long time. And they want to put a medical facility / shelter in there as an adjunct to their current shelter. And they needed a change in zoning. And they've been trying for, I don't know, many, many months, if not well over a year, to get that done. They have not been able to get it done. And Alderman Roberto Maldonado just said, 26th Ward, that's in Logan Square, said, no, I'm not going to allow the change in zoning. He came really close to allowing it. And at the last minute, he said no. My question to the alderman, and I ask this in a very public way at this point, because I've tried to reach out to what is, by all accounts, a great alderman. I don't understand the disconnect, because not only is saving dogs' lives, of course, from my perspective, the right thing to do, we'd also be saving money, because fewer euthanized dogs at Chicago Animal Control, actually, there's a cost to euthanizing every animal. So, you know, I just don't understand why he would not allow for this change of zoning. The big question would be, okay, the neighbors say, I don't want barking dogs. The neighbors actually appreciate, apparently, clearly appreciate. They want to help. They want to help these dogs. And there wouldn't be barking dogs per se. There might be, but they're inside a building. You know, they're not running around the streets. Mm-hmm. But, and the neighbors understand that. The neighbors actually seem to say, we appreciate one tail at a time what you're trying to do here. Thank you. But the alderman is still saying, no, I don't want to do this. It's called aldermanic privilege, I believe. And something Lori Lightfoot ran, you know, that's a whole other show, I suppose, but I do think aldermen ought to have some privilege. They know their community, and they need to be able to respond more quickly. And if you take that away from them, I don't think that's a good thing. I don't know what's going on here. I just don't know. Well, we have some questions to get to, but if we start with my questions first, Dr. Marks, it's happening not only in Chicago, and it is happening in Chicago. Outbreaks of a bacterial infection, and from there, I will let you talk.
Yeah, so one disease that's been around for a long time, and thankfully is just now, a little late, but better late than never, getting a lot more momentum about it, is the prevention of a disease called leptospirosis. So leptospirosis is a bacteria that lives in a lot of rodents around the city, predominantly the rats, but also raccoons and opossums and skunks and quite a few others that we now have as urban wildlife. And those animals do not have any problems carrying around this bacteria, but they urinate it out and it sits in standing water around the city. So in alleyways and puddles at the dog beach, in the lake, other places in your yard, poor draining courtyards, those kind of things. And our dogs can either drink that water directly or step in it and lick their feet, and transmission begins.
And this is potentially, anyway, a very serious illness. I know you... Most veterinarians have treated dogs with leptospirosis, and, you know, it can go either way, depending on when it's caught.
That's true. Yeah, so leptospirosis, when it causes disease in pets, causes liver and kidney disease. And when it first starts, it looks like the flu, so vomiting, diarrhea, and fever, not eating, not moving around much.
Not the dog flu, but our stomach flu.
Correct,
right?
A GI flu.
Right.
A gastro flu. And unfortunately, just like what I would say a lot of pet owners do, if your dog has a little bit of diarrhea and isn't eating one day, I don't know if it's necessary every single time to rush right in, right? But this is going on a few days, and unfortunately, we don't see those dogs all the time in the early stages of disease. And when we do catch them, they can be in liver or kidney failure. And at that point, it is one of those cases where, even though it is a bacterial disease and we can use antibiotics, sometimes the effects of the bacteria are too much for us to treat, and it can be fatal.
And what's interesting about this, some dogs don't get sick, but that's good for that dog, but not good for the community in a sense.
No, it's a really good point. 20% of dogs are carriers, so they act like those rats walking around the city. So the bacteria can live in them, and what it causes is excessive urination. So the reason that's twofold bad for us as the humans living in Chicago, one is they're urinating more frequently. And just like the rats, when they urinate, they transmit the bacteria into the community. And so other dogs can pick it up, so they can be a source of contagion. The thing that I worry about also is that those dogs are urinating more, which usually means they're having accidents in your house. So while that urine is sitting in your house or you're cleaning it up, that can be a source of infection for humans.
Now, that's a serious point to talk about.
Yes.
And it's not only, clearly, toddlers, you know, they're on the floor anyway, right?
Right.
And they're walking around. You didn't clean it up well, or maybe you didn't even notice it yet, and the toddler, and then toddler puts fingers to mouth.
Right.
But even adults can get leptospirosis as well by simply not washing their hands at all or not washing it very well after you clean up. It doesn't happen every day, but it really happens. And it's all about prevention.
Right. So, you know, in the world, leptospirosis is the most common infectious zoonotic disease. So just to refresh, zoonotic means transmission from animals to humans.
And say that again, because I want to make a point of this. According to the World Health Organization,
that's
I
right.
know that's where you're looking at, and you go to primarily third world countries where people share a river to bathe
right.
or wash their clothes with the cows or whatever else may be in the river. Leptospirosis actually kills a lot of people.
It does. And it actually, at least on record, they suspect many more. Over 70 people died in Puerto Rico during Hurricane Maria from lepto. So it is a very, very common infectious disease. But we know worldwide, 10% of humans get lepto from their dogs. So to me, one case of lepto in a human is too many cases, and one case of lepto in a dog is too many cases. So yes, it's all about prevention. We don't want to create hysteria here, but it's important to know it's there. And they just did a study at the Ohio State University, which we're going to talk about. And
I can, the Ohio State University.
The, yes. I can lead that in for you. It was really interesting, and our practice was one of the two practices that assisted in that.
Blum Animal Hospital.
And what we did is look at the cases of lepto, and they were really looking from an epidemiologic perspective, what neighborhoods is lepto in? And it's everywhere. And I don't know if I'm proud to say this, but my zip code,
where you live,
is number one, which is really frightening.
Well, right? It is, because there are some. So you happen to live, we don't, what's the broad community?
North Center.
All right. So lots of families in North Center, lots of children in North Center, schools, some really good schools in North Center, and lots of dogs in North Center. But it's not only about dogs, frankly, as well. In New York City last year, someone died of leptospirosis, wasn't near a dog, didn't have a dog. We don't want to always blame dogs here. I don't know if they ever did find out what happened, but it probably had something to do with rats.
Right. And we just, this past year, we were named the rattiest city in the country. Go Chicago. yay for the rats, not good for anybody else. So we have these reservoirs of lepto. We've had rainy weather, so we have a lot of water. And we think this beautiful weekend we have people wanting to get outside. So I think it is important to discuss the dogs that are at risk, right?
And even if you take, so we think, when people think of leptospirosis, and I hope we've busted this myth, if people even know what leptospirosis is, they may think out in the country somewhere. And that's true, you know, where there's a lot of wildlife. But as you point out, we now have urban wildlife, and those city rats are responsible. So it happens in urban areas, arguably today, in 2019, maybe more often than even out in the country somewhere. Having said that, Lake Michigan. So when we think of lepto, we think of the ponds or even a puddle that a rat can relieve him or herself in. But how about Lake Michigan? Because that's such a broad, vast area of water, you would think no problem. However,
no, it's still possible. I mean, dogs get Giardia from Lake Michigan and they get lepto from Lake Michigan. You know, the thing that we have to remember is what puts your dog at risk is water. So if your dog, I have clients that, when we're talking about this, say, well, my dog doesn't go swimming at the lake and my dog doesn't go to dog parks. But let me tell you, if you live by an alleyway in Chicago, it doesn't drain well. And we have any rainy weather and you walk through the alley as a shortcut, your dog is stepping in areas that...
So the dog doesn't have to drink it.
Absolutely
not. The
dog
can lick paws, and dogs do that.
Yeah. And if your dog has allergies and is not being managed well, you know that your dog is sitting there on the couch licking that horrible... licking of their feet many, many times a day.
Yep.
So it's out there, and we definitely want to make sure that people are aware of this. Again, not just for their dog's health, which of course is what I've committed my life to, and cats.
Thank you.
But also for humans, because they're, you know, we're public health officers and we need to protect families too.
So two text questions here essentially saying the same thing. Perfect questions. Can we prevent this? And the answer is yes.
Yes, yes. So there's a couple different things that we want to talk about. One is, please be honest when you're talking to your veterinarian about your dog's lifestyle, right? So if you are in any of these areas, again, the communal dog areas is a given, but if your dog has any access to water sources or stepping in that, so again, poor draining courtyards, alleyways, backyards, if rats can get into your backyard, even if you have a fence. So please consider if your dog stays in the backyard, especially a lot of time back there unsupervised, neighborhoods, any place that your dog can step and lick their feet into anything that's moist or contaminated water sources. And if they are, talk to your veterinarian about vaccination strategies. The vaccinations that are out for lepto now, the four-way, that combines several strains of the most common ones that we see here. Now, no vaccine is 100%. We always want to stress that. It lessens the chance of getting the disease, and if the dog gets the disease, it really lessens the severity of disease. So
it lessens the spreading to other dogs in the community, too, I believe.
That's right. Yeah, so there's a lot of positives about vaccination, but vaccination is really key to prevention of this disease, not only for those dogs that are getting acutely ill, but also those carriers, because we want to protect the community too.
Yep, perfect. 10 minutes before 7 on WGN, I want to talk about dog bite prevention. It is coming up on National Dog Bite Prevention Week. We also have questions here, and you can add to those questions, 312-981-7200. Oh, we're back. That happens when Dr. Marks and I are together. We're just chit-chatting about all sorts of different things. You know, this is really important, Dr. Marks, and I know you feel very strongly about it because potentially our children in particular, but any human being, can be affected, which is why prevention is so incredibly important. We also, of course, want to keep our dogs healthy. And the more leptospirosis there is in a community, according to the study, two things that I remember. According to the, and makes sense, the more lepto in a community, the more lepto in the community. It kind of grows like a snowball would. Mm-hmm. Also, it's puppies, according to the study commissioned, and thank you for Merck Animal Health to do this in the first place. But according to that study, it's puppies that are most affected.
Right, because if you think about it, puppies have the most naive immune system, right? So they're relying on their mom until they're fully done with their vaccine series. And I would say, subjectively, I have a lot more owners coming in now with puppies that they have purchased that may have different recommendations from their breeder than what we predominantly recommend.
So they actually are listening to their breeder and not their personal veterinarian. Do people do that? Be honest.
Sometimes they do.
And what studies have shown is they'll actually listen. You guys, don't do this. They'll actually listen to some guy at a pet store, really, with no veterinary training whatsoever, rather than their veterinarian. I don't get that.
Well, we're trying to move forward.
Yeah, I know. And it's crazy,
it,
though.
It is
crazy. How many years did you go to school and continue to study, and in your case, teach other people, in your case? But it's something that I don't at all get. We have some text questions here. I want to try to get to those. My daughter's older puppy is chewing on everything, including her dog beds. Can you help?
Well, yeah, first thing is we need to know how old that puppy is, right? So the puppy actually might be truly teething and needs some better strategies at home.
And what is a good strategy for teething puppies if it is young enough to still be teething?
Yeah, so a couple things. One is we need to make sure that puppies don't have boredom, because when they get bored, they teeth. So puzzle feeders are great to keep them occupied, having lots of different toys that are appropriate for them to chew. And when consistency is always the key. So if your puppy picks up your shoe, they don't know the difference between your nice shoe and your old tennis shoes. So as soon as they pick that up, you take it out of their mouth, tell their name and no, and instantly give them something to chew on that they choose and positively reward them. And that has to happen all the time by every member of your family.
And I believe that those Kong toys, the hard rubber toys or something like that, that you stick in the freezer.
It's perfect.
I mean, you can answer questions about children's teeth I would know nothing about. But I'm told that having something cold helps to relieve discomfort.
Absolutely. We use a lot of times just taking an old face cloth with either chicken broth or water and freezing it and letting them gnaw on that to supervise is really helpful.
Leptospirosis vaccine is important. A text I'm reading out of the city, too. I live in Denver's, a small rural community downstate. I've never heard of that community. Sorry. And we have lots of critters, but that's so true.
Hi to Denver's. Yes. I mean, leptospirosis now, again, we talked about this, used to be thought to be rural. It's now considered an everywhere disease. So wherever you live in the country, the U.S., whether it be urban, rural, suburban, if there is a water source and there are urban or rural wildlife, you have lepto around you.
Yeah, I have no phone calls, mostly because the phones are down, apparently, incidentally. I don't know what that's about, but that's okay. I would try to get to some other text, too, but I wanted to get to Dog Bite Prevention Week. That's coming up beginning tomorrow, in fact.
Yes.
Happy Dog Bite Prevention Week. But you know what? Prevention is so incredibly important. I mean, we're talking about zoonotic illness here. Well, people are obviously hurt if there's a dog bite. But in addition to that, that dog's life may be gone because the dog may be euthanized. So prevention is mostly possible, in my opinion, and clearly, really, potentially life-saving.
Yeah, I think there's two important things to think about there. One is I really hope this becomes more widespread, and part of Fear Free is doing this too.
Yes.
But is recognizing dog body language. So dogs are communicating to us every time we see them. And unfortunately, not everybody is aware of anxious or fearful dog body language. Dogs don't like it when you come right up to them and shove your hand in their face. That is not how they greet us, and that's not how we should be greeting them. So there's going to be a lot more information about how to read that. But second of all, so important to be always teaching your kids about how to properly approach a dog on the street. We don't run up to it and have some child, again, stick their hand very aggressively a lot of times, yeah, right at a dog's face, which is a sensitive part to them. So it's always important. And you did a great Facebook Live with Victoria Stillwell about
Thank you.
Anti-cruelty, about how to approach a dog properly. They need to ask their mom, first of all, if they can pet that dog. And then they need to ask the owner of that dog if they can. Not every dog is social with kids, and not every dog is showing that kind of body language that says, yes, approach me. I'm ready for you to touch me. We can't assume that all the time.
I agree totally. And never, ever, ever leave a dog, a cat, a ferret, a parrot, for that matter, any pet, alone with a very young child, even if it's your own pet.
Never.
All right. Dr. Natalie Marks, Blum Animal Hospital in Chicago, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve.
And as much as anyone else on the planet, you know the pets aren't like family. They are family. That's why the doctors and staff at MedVet Chicago, I think you know that place well, are all you do.
I do.
Yes.
Lots of great colleagues there.
Yes, indeed. Are always there when you and your pets need them the most. They're located at the corner of Belmont, Western, and Clybourne. You might see Dr. Marks in there on occasion. MedVet provides emergency specialty and critical care 24/7. That's the whole idea. Here's something fancy. They're a VECCS Level 1 Trauma Center, American Animal Hospital Association accredited referral hospital. Your hospital's an American Animal Hospital Association.
Yes, we are.
Hospital, too. And incidentally, the first fear-free hospital in Illinois.
Yes, we are. Very proud of that.
Yeah, as you should be. So that is MedVet Chicago, 773-281-7110. MedVetForPets.com, 773-281-7110.